baseball, Blue Jays, and more baseball. It's the walk-off with Scott Belford and Adam Mack.
This ball is crushed.
The Die Hard Podcast for the casual fan.
And another one. My goodness.
We are catching our errors so much quicker than we would have. Even 1 year ago, it is impressive. Now, this is truly the third time that Adam and I have started this podcast. But we feel good about it right now, right? We're seeing levels. Everything is looking good.
The levels are looking good. Yeah, you're looking handsome. You can hear me. I can hear you. I think everything's being recorded.
This
third
is
time's a charm. That's why they say it. Right? Third time's a charm.
And we don't strike out. Not here on the walk off. We take two strikes. Yeah, we change our approach.
This is the two strike good Boba Shad approach. The podcast.
No leg kick, gang. Good morning. Welcome to the walk-off. I'm Scott Belford, joined as always by the best co-host of the biz, Adam Mack. We've got all sorts of great stuff to talk about here. Kevin Kiermaier, it has been announced. He is going to see all sorts of playing time. How do Blue Jays fans feel about it? How do Adam and I feel about it? Well, we're going to get into it. Carlos Rodon, the final big free agent on the starting pitching market that's going to really move the needle, finally has a team, and it's the dang Yankees. So we'll talk the AL East and what those opponents in there look like. Where are the Jays currently at? Are we happy with where they're sitting? We're going to go over the positives and negatives of where this team is looking right now. Scott Boras clients, well, aren't they happy to be with Boras Corp this season, who is pushing $1 billion in signings? Dansby Swanson seems to be the last lone shortstop of the top four that is yet to find a home. We'll talk where he could go, and we will end things with a whatcha watching this weekend. Okay, before we get into it, I've done this tease two different times now, so I've got it down pat, everybody. But we had a really cool prospect join us last week. We just released his episode yesterday. Mackenzie Mueller, Mac Mueller, he was an outfielder with the High A Vancouver Canadians this season. He got called upon in May in the 11th inning as a position player to come in and just kill an inning. You know, that old bullpen story. We've gone through all of our pitchers. Time to throw in the second baseman. So Mac Mueller comes in from the outfield to pitch an inning and, for lack of a better way of putting it, blew the Blue Jays development system away. They were like, you know what? Maybe you should be trying to be a pitcher. So he kind of tells the story of transitioning from an everyday position player to a pitcher this season, starting over, going back to the Florida State League to kind of learn how to pitch again. He used to pitch back in high school, but had never really put much time into it since joining the Blue Jays and their minor league system. Anyways, that is up right now here on YouTube. Feel free to give it a watch. I know a lot of you are enjoying these prospect episodes we're putting out. Of course, if you're listening to this and haven't watched it, it's also available on audio. We appreciate you audio folks as well. Okay, Adam, let's talk Kevin Kiermaier. News dropped just yesterday. Shai Davidi had a tweet, friend of the show, Sportsnet analyst, that despite maybe some fans' thoughts of where Kevin Kiermaier fit into this starting rotation and into the outfield, which some of us viewed him as a fourth outfielder, doesn't look to be the case. It looks like he is going to be taking the majority of the time in center field. He's going to be the everyday center fielder as long as he's healthy. Where are you at on this, Adam? I mean, maybe not ideal, but does he have some juice left in the tank? We'd love to hear everyone on YouTube too. Feel free to drop your comments.
Yeah, vent your feelings to us. group therapy here on the walk-off. I guess my biggest concern with Kevin Kiermaier is just that he is older. He's on the back nine, to use a golfing reference, and coming off a hip surgery. So we haven't really seen him out there playing a full workload since coming back from the hip surgery. So that's the big concern for me. can he pull off 140 games in center field? I'm gonna have to trust that the vetting process was handled. The doctors looked at him. They viewed the, I don't know, x-rays, MRI. What do you do with a hip surgery? They looked at it anyways.
Mm-hmm.
To lift his leg. They saw how high he could lift it. And they're like, good to go.
This is such a good point. I mean, because Blue Jays fans, we know what Kevin Kiermaier can do in the outfield. We've all watched him devastate us time and time again over the last 10 years. There's no questioning what a force KK can be in that center field position. But it is worth questioning, how healthy is he? How much time can he spend in this Blue Jays outfield? Because we've already got a center fielder who is struggling to stay on the field, which is one of the big reasons why Kevin Kiermaier was brought in. And man, I am a little trepidatious about this. I'm a little nervous about it. Even when they signed him and then the terms took a full week to come out, you're like, is he passing his physical? Is the guy healthy? Why is it taking so long for it to be announced that he's making $9 million and is signed for 1 year? And it could just be nothing. It could be, I'm a worrier and, you know, I got to find something to worry about. But it seemed a little odd. And yes, do I trust Kevin Kiermaier in center field? If he's healthy, and I don't know where you are, I do. If he's healthy, Adam, is he fine in center field?
Yeah, I mean, you don't need every single position to mash, I guess, is the theory, right? We do have some big boys to swing the bat. Offensively, the stats don't blow you away. I'm looking at his stats right now. Nothing here really screams stud at the plate.
Career and I OPS think this
plus
is
plus of 98, so a little below average. He was 89 OPS plus last year. Career batting average around in the 240s. So like, okay.
Not and this is no secret, right? Like, we're well aware of where Kevin Kiermaier sits offensively. I know there's been a lot of talk about, oh my God, this is the dude they're bringing in to replace Teoscar Hernandez. And offensively, that is a fair statement.
Yeah.
Teoscar 100% is going to put up more home runs. He's going to put up more RBIs. He's a big middle of the order bat, something Kevin Kiermaier is not, even a little bit. However, I think it is worth mentioning, and I know you brought this up, your favorite stat, wins above replacement, the war. It does look like it all washes out in the end, that Kevin Kiermaier is bringing enough defensively to the table that, yes, he is a step down from Teoscar's production offensively, but defensively, he's such a step up that in the end, it actually looks like you're coming out in the positive.
Yeah, I'm not a big believer in war. It's a vibe stat. It's a pseudoscience.
We're going to get so many comments being like, it is not a vibe stat.
It's the Wizard of Oz of stats. It's, trust me, we have an algorithm, but you wouldn't understand it. So don't even ask. Okay, that's literally, if you go to Wikipedia, you go, how is war defined? They said, don't even bother. That's all it says.
Sometimes we get comments, Adam, that you and I agree on too many things, but this is one where you and I actually disagree. We disagree on war. Okay.
Yes. All right. We go down a whole rabbit hole here. Kevin Kiermaier versus Kevin Pillar.
Interesting. I like where you're going with this.
The human highlight reel in center field, Kevin Pillar, beloved by Blue Jays fans.
Truly.
Can we expect that level of defense from Kevin Kiermaier? Is he flashing in the outfield, or is he just rock solid?
I think that Kevin Kiermaier is a little faster than Kevin Pillar was, so those diving catches aren't going to be diving catches, but they will be caught.
Fair enough. That's all I needed to know. That's all I needed
truly
to know. Hey, man.
Kiermaier is a stud. Growing up playing Pee Wee
baseball,
field.
I had a teammate, Randall. Hi, Randall, if you're listening. How you doing? Randall, one of my favorite teammates to play with in all of sports. He was the kind of guy where, you know, when you're playing hockey, you'd have like a defenseman go end to end untouched and score. And then Randall would be coming in as the refs were checking like the number to go tell for the score sheet. And Randall would just be saying, "Hey, did you like that pass I gave you?" Even though he didn't pass it, just so the ref was "Oh, I guess number six gets an assist." So that's Randall.
He's picking up fake assists. I love
phantom
it.
Phantom assists on the score sheet. Anyways, defensively playing assists. Baseball. He was the kind of guy, pop fly. He settled under it. He'd take two big steps to the left and make it a diving catch at the last minute.
Right.
Randall, great guy. Maybe we get one or two of those from Kevin Kiermaier, but as long as he's getting there, I guess is the takeaway. So,
okay, so we are going to get into another outfield addition. And I think that we're going to just hold off before we do that and talk some of these other AL East teams. The fact Carlos Rodon just signed with the New York Yankees, 6 years, $162 million, shoring up that rotation pretty darn nicely. Listen, I've got a list of AL East starters here for each team. And this division, all I can say is, buddy, thank God there is a more balanced schedule coming in 2023. New York Yankees.
But it's still weighted, right? Like, we still will play the AL East more than everyone else.
Instead of playing the New York Yankees, the Boston Red Sox, Orioles, and Rays 19 times each, we're playing them 14 times each. And those 20 fewer games that we need to play, oh, buddy, it just means you're needing to face Gerrit Cole and Carlos Rodon one or two times less a year. Please, I'm all for it. Sign me up on that.
That is true. I guess this isn't the point of your topic here, but I do think it is worth noting that while our schedule will be easier, which should mean, like you said, 20 games outside of the AL East next year. So that should be a couple extra wins in the win column. The Yankees also get that.
Yes, they do.
So the whole record of the AL East is going to be inflated next year.
Which is wild to think, being the AL East is always in competition for three of the five teams to be in the playoffs. So it's a good point. You know, yes, we're playing easier teams, but so are those other guys. And it's all going to even out in the end, most likely. The New York Yankees starting rotation is Gerrit Cole, Carlos Rodon, Nestor Cortez, Luis Severino, Frankie Montas, and then their sixth guy, German, there. Man, like the depth, the quality. I hate so much that Nestor Cortez is like their fourth starter and is probably a number two with most organizations. Yeah, I mean, sure. even looking at Tampa Bay, who probably rivals the Yankees a little bit there with McClanahan, Glasnow, Rasmussen, Springs. They just got Eflin. Like, there are some really solid rotations. And this is one thing I want to talk right now. I don't feel like the Blue Jays should relegate themselves to a wild card team. I truly believe they should still be going after this division. I don't know where the management is on this. When they watch Carlos Rodon sign that mega deal for the Yankees, it does put the Yankees one step ahead of everyone else. And is there a coinciding move here from the Blue Jays to try and even things out? I sure hope so, man. Like, we've heard all of these talks about all of these tires they've kicked and all these trade possibilities. Might be time to push those chips in, man.
Okay, well, I will say, I was watching the MLB Network, and they actually, this was just before the Yankees signed Rodon, but they had the Blue Jays starting rotation as a top three in baseball, which, you know, from a neutral perspective, I always like to hear, right? Because you're mm-hmm. own personal bias. You either think your team is better than it is, or you think it's way worse than it, you know, you're either too hard on it.
Yeah.
So to hear some positivity from a neutral source was good. they have the Blue Jays as the team to beat in the American League East. So some real confidence from people who aren't Blue Jays fans,
mm-hmm.
which is good to hear. I mean, is that starting rotation in New York something to drool over and not in a good way? Yeah, absolutely. But the silver lining is there's seven statues standing in the field behind that pitcher. So, and by statues, I mean like ancient statues. These guys are mid-30s at this point. Anthony Rizzo, 33.
Yeah.
DJ LeMahieu, 34. Josh Donaldson, 37. Wow, did he ever get old quickly. I mean, he did it 1 year at a time, but still, it snuck up on you. Aaron Judge, wrong side of 30 now. Giancarlo Stanton, mm-hmm. 33. Like, this is an
aging veteran team. There's no doubt. And this is a team that managed to stay healthy last year, and there is no guarantee they do it again. I know this is one of the Yankees' biggest Achilles heels has been health over the last couple of years, especially with their stud star right fielder, Aaron Judge.
I mean, he did it last year, but man, I wish I had this conversation ready to pull up, but the conversation with you, me, and Joel that we've been having all week about historic old sluggers on mm-hmm. the wrong side of where Aaron Judge is now, it's kind of hilarious. I can't say this. I was going to say I wish Aaron Judge all the best, but because he signed with the Yankees, I really don't. I wish him all of the happiness that any yes. human deserves. I'll give him that. But I hope the Yankees fans boo him a lot over the next 9 years. I hope he absolutely, like, he's already gotten paid. I hope that that contract turns out to be historically one of the all-time worst contracts.
And it has the possibility of being just that. It's going to be interesting to see what goes on. Here's a fun little stat. While we're talking the Yankees rotation that I found on Twitter, Whit Merrifield is 33-86. So 33 hits over 86 plate appearances with 12 doubles and a home run against the Yankees five-man rotation. Just a masher against
right.
those.
We'll take that.
Yeah, we'll take that. Old Whit at the back end of the rotation. And Whit Merrifield is really, in my opinion, such a wild card for this 2023 season that no one's talking about. He has the track record of being the batting champion. You know, he is toiled away in that garbage organization that is the Royals for the last 5 years.
Well, let's pivot then, and let's move on from Rodon to the Yankees, and let's talk the Blue Jays, where
yes.
this team sits moving forward. We can grade the offseason, how this team has done, or we can just do an assessment. We can do a this year versus last year comparison, a couple of different directions we could take this. Generally, let's just start with this. How are you feeling about this team relative to last year?
I was really getting nervous. I was really stressing out. And I know we touched on this Tuesday during mailbag. The addition of Chris Bassitt has truly settled my nerves. It has calmed the waters around me. I am no longer in a panic. I truly believe that this team that is, if you were to field the Blue Jays right now, I feel good about them, man. Yeah, there's still some holes. Would I like to see somebody like Johnny Cueto, a fifth starter that has been rumored the Blue Jays are interested in? Would I like to see them go that route? Spend another $10 million to bring in some insurance at the back end of this rotation? I would love that. Would I like to see all of these rumors about them actually finding a left-handed bat that fits into the top five of this order? A Michael Conforto, a Michael Brantley, a Brian Reynolds, whatever direction they want to go, that would be great. By the way, Brian Reynolds, I know we're a little all over the place here. Rival execs have come out and been like, the asking price for him is, I think it's in quotes, absolutely ridiculous that they're asking for more than the Nationals got for Soto. Yeah. So basically the Pirates don't want to trade Brian Reynolds as all this breaks down to, right? Like if you set the price high enough and you can be like, go to his agent and be like, we know you want to trade, but we're sorry. There's no possible way to do this. So Brian Reynolds isn't really an option, I don't think. But anyways, that's where I'm at on the season so far. I would give it a B minus. Am I panicking? No. Is this team better than they – let me ask you this. Mm-hmm. And feel free to answer this, everyone, in comments as well. Is this team better right now than it was last year? Do you feel more confident with this starting rotation where they're at, with this core where they're at, okay, Oscar out, Kiermaier in? Are you happier right now?
Yes.
You are.
It's not a resounding I feel the same way, but it's a
no. My needle is a little bit. I feel like this is a little bit more of a balanced team.
Yeah, I think Bassett is a legitimate improvement on what we should have expected realistically from Ross Stripling this year. Ross Stripling last year. And let me clarify. Do I think that Chris Bassett is necessarily going to give us better numbers this year than Ross Stripling did last year? I am not confident of that. Ross Stripling played incredibly well last year. But do I think that Chris Bassett, his number line in 2023 is better than Ross Stripling's in 2023? I'm very confident that yes. And that's
probably that's all you can ask for, really.
In the butt. But yeah, I feel better about it. He's going to be a guy that eats innings for us and can go a third time through the order and help us get our bullpen back in check when we need them to. And Ross Stripling wasn't really that guy. He was great for five innings.
I think where this bullpen is at also going into the 2023 season is a lot healthier and a lot deeper than going into the 2022 season. This isn't just the addition of Eric Swanson, although that is a huge piece to land in the back end of this bullpen. But if you just even look at how much they bolstered this pen since the trade deadline with the acquisition of Anthony Bass, you look at Zach Pop, where he could possibly fit into this bullpen is incredibly interesting. He's got that mega sinker. He's got the ability to touch 98, 99. And he only increased his whiff rate as a Toronto Blue Jay with his swing and miss. There's to the point where there are rumors where maybe the Blue Jays could be into trading a guy like, let's say, Adam Simber, and then using Zach Pop in that sort of mid-range seventh inning sort of spot, right? I think this Blue Jays bullpen is so much better than it's been the last couple of years. And I think that's one of the biggest things that as fans, we should be pleased with. I'm well aware there still isn't that big stud 103 mile an hour guy at the back end of the pen that everyone wants to, you know, hang their hat on the velo tree, put that cheddar on there. Right. But
look, last year, Vladdy took a step back. Still great. Not MVP caliber. I think he has a bounce back season in 2023. I think that growing pains last year, this is part of being a pro. You know, it's not just this, right? It's this move. That's how your trajectory goes. Last year was the step back. Hopefully next year is another step forward. Bo Bichette finished the year. If you just look at his season totals, looked great. You were not feeling that way about Bo Bichette in August.
If Bo Bichette can be three quarters of what he was in September, but all season long, we're going to see some major steps forward offensively from this team. And one thing to keep in mind, too, is that redundancy matters, right? Like constantly throwing up those right-handed power hitting bats. Yeah. Is going to produce some gaudy numbers at times, especially when you're playing the Royals or the Reds. Mm-hmm. But you know where it does hurt is in scenarios like where you get put up pinned up against Luis Castillo in a wild card game. And there isn't that variance coming to the plate to throw him off even a little bit. So I think that a team that it, I know you don't feel the same way, and that's fine. I just,
look, this is going to be the, like, if Kevin Kiermaier is our everyday center fielder, and that's the way it's shaping up at the moment, this is the, all right, let's see it then. This is the left-handed bat just for the sake of having a left-handed bat, as far as I'm concerned. Like, this is a lefty bat.
No, you're not wrong.
But
you're
it is not a Freddie Freeman. It is not a Juan Soto. It is a Kevin Kiermaier, but it is a lefty bat. So let's see if the ideal lineup last year was Teoscar, Springer, and Lourdes Gurriel as our outfielders. And this year it is Lourdes Gurriel Jr., George Springer, and Kevin Kiermaier. We're losing power, but we're gaining a lefty bat. So I don't think that that's necessarily, in terms of offensively, I don't think Kevin Kiermaier is the difference between getting to Luis Castillo in that game against the Mariners last year.
No. But is Michael Brantley, is Andrew Benintendi, is Michael Conforto? I don't know.
They aren't on our team, though.
100%.
So, yeah, so if we add an impact left-handed bat, sure.
This is what I mean. If they are going to add an impact left-handed bat, which I think is still an incredibly important thing for this organization to do, who do you prefer? Is there a preference? Would you like to see Michael Brantley or Conforto, or is Benintendi, or are they all the same to you?
They're all the same to me.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly.
They all have their own risks.
Cody Bellinger was in a class of his own. I really wish we had gotten him. I think he's going to have a very successful year this year. Or maybe not, but it's 1 year. I will say this as far as the lefty bat. In a vacuum, I think having more lefty bats in the lineup, you would see an impact on the season total numbers of all the righties. I think all the righties benefit from having more lefties in the lineup, but in a one game scenario, I still think it's a one game crapshoot. Anything can happen, but that's baseball. That's sports. That's life.
Baseball. That's baseball. And that's life, isn't it? Yeah. You take the averages out and one game at a time.
Right. I'm happy with the Jays off season so far. I'm not thrilled, but I do just want to point out Orioles were talking a big game this off season that they were going to go all in. They've done nothing.
They have done very, very little.
Tampa Bay Rays done very little.
Mm-hmm.
Boston Red Sox have lost as much as they've gained.
Mm-hmm.
Minnesota Twins. What's going on in Minnesota? Like,
bye-bye, Carlos, yeah.
For everyone who's frustrated with the Blue Jays because it's kind of been a neutral off season, like, we've added in some, but we've lost in others, and is this team really any better than it is? I think it is better than it is, and we've made a lot more moves than a lot of teams. We just haven't signed Aaron Judge or had the big trade or...
If this team goes out and gets Johnny Cueto to be their number five starter and a Michael Brantley to fit into that top five in the order, man, I'm so happy with this offseason. It really did play out exactly how I would have hoped it did. Maybe not with the exact names, but even when we went into this and we talked, I was always of the mindset of it's not so much the guy we need. It's does the person that is brought in help that area of need that, you know, was so blatant last year with the lefty bat or just the lack of depth in the rotation, having that high leverage guy in the bullpen. All of these things were stuff we were constantly talking about, not just us, Blue Jays fans in general. And to see them taking these difficult steps to try and balance the lineup, to bolster the depth in the starting rotation, to fix some of these bullpen problems. You got to play the games and you need to see how this all plays out. But I do feel more positive about this team going into this 2023 season than maybe I did last year, them going into 2022. Should we talk the big money? Scott Boras?
Yeah, Scott Boras. $1 billion.
Ken Rosenthal was the one who broke the Carlos Rodon news and the fact the Yankees went $162 million over 6 years. But that's the fourth contract that was at least that Scott Boras has been at the helm of the negotiating table to score those deals, right? We're well aware of where Brandon Nimmo wound up and the fact that he got his mega deal 6 years, also $162 million. Carlos Correa, buddy, I don't think any of us saw him getting $350 million. I don't think any of us saw him going 13 years, and the fact he managed to fandangle his way there, I was actually quite impressed with the way he handled last year's free agency, getting that one-year deal with Minnesota, a bridge contract with an opt-out, lining him up to all of a sudden hit free agency again. And despite the fact that it being with stud shortstops like Xander and Trey to still get his mega deal, especially after he went and fired his last agent last year and they had to do all this weird stuff to make sure his past agent didn't get paid. Remember where?
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm sure that was a factor in last year's deal with the Twins there, was just to make sure that Boras got the full commission on this $350 million. That's kind of exactly where I honestly expected Carlos Correa to get. I'm
really?
Yeah, like, so young, 27, 28 years old.
Yeah.
Other than like the whole Astros scandal of it all, this is the face of a franchise type of a guy.
You know where I was at? I think I thought Trey Turner was going to be the top contract. So when he got 11 years, 300, I thought that Carlos would get matched with it, or even with Lindor, and the fact that he beat it. But again, you saw these guys like Carlos Correa go till 40 years old when he signed. I mean, that was what they did with Turner. That's how they reacted with Judge, right? Signing these guys to 40. So if Correa is like, listen, lock up, I'm younger, lock me up till I'm 40 also.
2 years younger, so give me 2 more years at the same rate. It's a big number, but it's, I guess, honestly, I know you were measuring it off of what Trey Turner got. I was still measuring it in retrospect off of what Fernando Tatis Jr. got.
That's probably a more accurate.
So I was going young guy, but he does have the resume so far. Mm-hmm. World Series champ, great numbers, great defensively, all these things. And he's only 27. So that's kind of where I was like, well, I don't know what Fernando Tatis Jr. ended up getting. I can look that up quick, but.
Yeah,
it was like $340 million over 14. So I kind of figured it would be around that,
somewhere in that realm. You know, a good guess.
A year of inflation and whatever. I just figured numbers are just going to go up anyways. But yeah, no, big payday for him. And again, this just makes me think Bo Bichette going to get big money, man. $400 million maybe for Bo Bichette. Am I way off base with that?
I'm really curious to see. I know there are some people who think that is an absolute insane evaluation, but I don't know. The more you watch these other free agents land, the fact that he's 24, the fact that honestly, if Bo Bichette takes a step forward defensively and at age 25 plays average defense, I'm not even saying is put in that top realm of defensive shortstops, just plays an average shortstop. Yeah, I think he's a $300 million guy personally. And especially if he shows a little bit of consistency at the plate this year, you know, I know his numbers over 162 in 2022 were pretty darn good, but if he can do that without the huge valleys and the big mountain peaks, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, the kid is going to get paid, which would mean free agency at 2026 for Bo Bichette, there might be nothing this front office can do but watch him walk.
I guess I'm just looking at the free agents coming up in the years before that right now. And I guess the one saving grace is that there isn't really two more years of elite shortstops who are going to continue to push the price up year over year. Like I'm looking next year is Javi Baez, Brandon Crawford.
Yeah.
Urshela. Isaiah Kiner-Falefa.
No elite.
Nothing really is jumping out at me. 2025, let's have a look at that year. We're looking at... I can never say this guy's name. Aldemis Diaz with Oakland. Ugh.
Yeah.
I can never say it. Anyways.
Yeah.
Ha-Sung Aldemis Kim with the Padres. Jorge Polanco.
Honestly, mid. All these mid guys. Like
none of these guys are going to get $300 million. Like, I don't think any of these guys are going to get $200 million. Right? So, it's... By the time Bo Bichette gets there in 26, it's...
Very interesting point, Adam. It's
going to continue to grow, I guess, is my point.
Appreciate you looking that up, because when you put it in perspective like that, my God, Dansby Swanson is going to get paid. Like, dude, he is not a $200 million guy. I don't care. Listen, I know how good he is. He's so good defensively and also has a very potent bat, which is such a nice combination for that shortstop position. But, man... Like, such a drop down in comparison to Dansby Swanson to Carlos Correa, but it's not going to matter. Like, Dansby's going to get
Dansby Swanson, or you miss out. And
or you miss out for the next 3 years. Yeah, 100%.
And then here's the competition for Bo Bichette. And this, it doesn't look good. Trevor Story is a free agent, but he's going to be 100 years old. David Fletcher, that's who. Jorge Polanco is going to be 100 years old. Paul DeJong, 100 years old. Kevin Kramer with the Brewers,
gonna be
35. That's your options at free agents here, Scott, if you're looking to add a shortstop in 2026.
The stars are lining up for him, eh? Wow.
Bo Bichette is going to be a superstar who's 27 years old, and he's the only option. So if there is four or five teams that need a shortstop, like there is this year. This year is a game of musical chairs where six teams needed one of four shortstops, and everyone got a boatload of money.
This is so disheartening.
Literally the only guy. I know. I didn't even realize how thin the shortstop class was.
We're researching as we do the show. Oh. Sorry, gang. But like, great content here. We're finding out as we go. Yeah. No, Bo Bichette, man.
He's in for some real money. It's stars are aligning for him. So enjoy your Bo Bichette jerseys for the next 3 years. We'll see.
Speaking of that, let's really quickly talk this before we end on what you're watching this weekend.
Yep.
You brought up before we hit record, you were feeling like Matt Chapman probably is going to walk in free agency. It doesn't look like unless the Blue Jays can do something in the next, and they could, they absolutely could. But unless the Blue Jays do something in the next few months, it's lining up like Chappie is set to hit free agency at 30 years old. Now, here's the thing. Adam, you were mentioning the third baseman free agents that are hitting the market next year. Rafael Devers and
Manny Machado
headline it. So if you were to compare it to this year, the Carlos Correa and Trey Turner of the shortstop market. But then there's nothing after that. Like, it is Matt Chapman is the next tier. And
unless,
we just watched.
Unless you want to take a swing on a 37-year-old Josh Donaldson.
Exactly. Which, no thank you. So a little disheartening there, too, because the market for Matt Chapman is going to be big time.
It is, yep.
We watched Brandon Nemo.
Third base. So yeah, Brandon Nemo got mega dollars.
And Brandon Nemo is a really good example because Brandon Nemo is a dude who last year's market would have been half of what it was this year. Mm-hmm. But that's the thing when you don't have quality options to choose from in that free agent class, the prices get out of hand. We're watching it firsthand here in 2023, like, or well, this offseason, right? Going into 2023.
Okay. Speaking of Matt Chapman, in a payday year, does he put up Marcus Semien numbers for the Blue Jays this year?
Would sure be nice. It would suck for the Jays in that they'd watch him walk, but I mean, I would rather an amazing year, right?
What if Matt Chapman just takes an absolute Danny Jansen approach at the plate and is just like, I'm just going to pull the ball as hard as I can and see what happens and hits 40 bombs.
He could do it, man. He could hit 40. I mean, he hit 37 in Oakland in 2018. I know he hasn't really done that since, but he has the power.
I'll take 40. Look, if Chapman goes, I'll take 40 on his way out the door.
Yeah.
The World Series.
I'm with you. I'm with you. Yeah. Yeah, let's do
all
it.
All the best in Texas, Matt Chapman.
Yeah, right? Oh, boy. All right, buddy. Let's wrap it up here. We'll do a What You're Watching this weekend. This has been something that you folks have kind of mentioned, wanted to hear. So this is something we're trying to integrate a little bit more into our Friday shows is What You're Watching this weekend. So I'll start with not watching anything. I'm going to spend this last weekend in Mexico and soak it up.
Watching but, the waves roll in off the ocean.
Watching the waves roll in. But how about you, buddy? What are you watching? Sure.
For me, this is my last week with my daughter until after Christmas. She's at her mom's for Christmas, and then she's with us for the last week of December. So we'll be watching Christmas movies all weekend long. Mm. So the classics, you got your Home Alone, just the original, not the other two or three or however many there is now. We'll be watching Elf, the Will Ferrell classic. Can't go wrong there. I'm not a big Grinch guy. Love the song.
Okay. Yeah.
Not a big Grinch movie guy, but my wife loves it, so I'm sure we'll be watching that. The new one on my list that I'm looking forward to watching, David Harbour from Stranger Things.
Okay, Harbour. Yeah.
He is in a movie that I think just came out last week called Violent Night. And he's
okay.
He is the real Santa Claus with all the magic powers, right? But he's in the middle of delivering toys to a house that is like being robbed, and he has to fight off the bad guys.
Amazing.
So it is
Home
like,
Alone, but with Santa.
No, but it's like this family has like $100 million in their vault. So this is like a high crime heist movie mixed with magical Santa powers, and it's watch a trailer if you haven't seen it. It looks so bad and so good at the same time. So that's
I love the name. That's the Violent Night.
You know, if you're starting your conversation with a pun like that, it's got to be
good. Come on.
So Violent Night. That's Santa fighting off criminals, hand to hand combat. It's bloody. It looks amazing. So I can't wait. Merry Christmas to all, and to all a good night. That's what I'm watching this weekend.
Awesome. Well, look at us, buddy. It only took us three times, but we got this down eventually. So thank you to everyone who has followed along to this point. We're chasing 4,000 subscribers on our main channel. We're also chasing 1,000 subs on our clip channel. Just a real big hearty thank you to everyone who has already hit the subscribe button. Pretty blown away by the community here within this walk-off pod we do. It's pretty impressive. You can follow us on Twitter at Walk-Off Podcast, Instagram, The Walk-Off Podcast. The link for the Discord is in the show notes. It's always free. It's always happening. All sorts of Blue Jays and baseball talk going on there. Thanks so much, everybody. Really appreciate your patronage. We'll talk and see you soon. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to the Walk Off Podcast with Scott Belford and Adam Mack, with a new episode every Friday.
Oh! Oscar with a drive. Cheese and cracker shows to pitch to him. Wrong move.
Thanks for listening.